G'day. Good afternoon. By now you will have learnt the name of the New Zealand SAS trooper killed in Afghanistan on Friday, Corporal Doug Grant. On behalf of the government, I want to offer my condolences to Corporal Grant's wife, Tina, and his two young children. Corporal Grant was a long-serving member of the New Zealand Army and had served his country overseas on a number of occasions, including two tours with the SAS in Afghanistan. His family have today expressed how proud they are of Doug as a soldier, a husband, a father, brother and son. His death is a reminder of the dangers our Defence Forces personnel face while serving in Afghanistan. As I've stated before, our SAS face constant threats and danger in Afghanistan, but they carry out an important role with great professionalism and courage. We mourn the death of Corporal Grant and we remain committed to the work the Defence Force is carrying out in Afghanistan. It is my intention to attend the memorial service and funeral for Corporal Doug Grant, which will occur either later this week or early next week. Just in relation to Libya, New Zealand has been watching unfolding events in Libya with concern but also hope. Rebel Libyan forces seem very close to taking the city of Tripoli and toppling the Gaddafi regime. There seems to us two options available to Gaddafi. He can choose to stay in Tripoli and fight to the end, resulting in further unnecessary bloodshed, or he can acknowledge the legitimate demands of the majority of Libyans and leave the country. We sincerely hope he chooses the latter course. New Zealand's ambassador in Cairo will shortly go to Benghazi in order to establish a working relationship with the Transitional National Council as the legitimate voice of the Libyan people. New Zealand has consistently supported UN and NATO action aimed at protecting innocent Libyans from Gaddafi's stated intention of severely punishing all those who have opposed him. All New Zealanders in Libya have been advised to leave the country. Our understanding is that seven New Zealanders have chosen to stay in Libya and remain in contact with the New Zealand Embassy in Cairo. Just in relation to the February 22nd earthquake, you will know that today marks the six-month anniversary since the devastating 6.3 magnitude earthquake struck Christchurch on the 22nd of February. It's also less than 2 weeks until we mark the one-year anniversary of the first 7.1 magnitude earthquake that struck Canterbury on the 4th of September. I want to take the opportunity to acknowledge these anniversaries. The events that occurred on 22nd of February represent New Zealand's largest ever natural disaster. Christchurch and indeed all of New Zealand was changed forever that day. 181 people tragically lost their lives, and my thoughts today are with the family and friends of those who lost loved ones. Thousands more lives have been affected by injury and by damage or destruction of their homes and disruption to their communities and workplaces, not to mention the emotional toll. I've been impressed by how the people of Canterbury have pulled together and shown great resilience in the aftermath of these earthquakes. The government moved quickly following the aftermath of the disaster on February 22nd. We declared a national state of emergency within hours, which remained in place for a number of weeks while we established a new government department, the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Authority, to lead and coordinate the recovery. Through Budget 2011, we have remained committed, and we've committed considerable financial resources to provide certainty for rebuilding of Christchurch. We have also established a Royal Commission of Inquiry to examine issues around the built environment in the Christchurch CBD. We must find answers for why so many lives were lost that day. There's still a long way to go in the recovery, and it's being made more difficult by the ongoing aftershocks. Just this morning, Christchurch was hit by a magnitude 4.2 jolt. This government remains committed to rebuilding Greater Christchurch and its surrounds. I believe we are making good progress, and the government will continue to drive momentum in the recovery. On Sunday, the Attorney General, Chris Finlayson, met with the families of Canterbury's earthquake victims' families to hear concerns about their level of representation in the Royal Commission of Inquiry process. Legal assistance for families of victims has been provided in the form of counsel assisting the Commission. Two senior lawyers, Stephen Mills QC and Mark Zareff, were appointed as independent counsel assisting the Royal Commission. Counsel assisting have a duty to bring all relevant material and evidence to the Royal Commission that will allow its terms of references to be met. The council assisting have used the powers of investigation under the Commission of Inquiries Act to request a wide range of information and expert advice relevant to the inquiry. We believe that in most cases, this assistance and the assistance of the Royal Commission is working well. I'm advised that two main issues were raised at Sunday's meetings by the families who were present. Families felt very strongly they needed to fully understand what was happening in the Royal Commission's process, including an understanding of the legal and technical aspects of the inquiry and its reports. These processes are complex and are not always easily accessible to non-lawyers, despite our best intentions, and specialist professional assistance may be required. Secondly, a number of family members were concerned that they had not yet had the opportunity to present their evidence and have it recorded by counsel. It's important that their evidence is recorded in a timely fashion and that counsel are available to assist with this. Mr. Finlayson has advised that further legal assistance is justified. After discussion at Cabinet today, an additional counsel assisting the Commission's Earthquakes Royal Commission will be appointed, with a specific focus on representing the interests of the families who lost loved ones in the 22nd February 2011 earthquake. Given the large number of families involved and their different needs and levels of engagement with the Royal Commission, it's appropriate that the lawyer appointed to represent their interests is part of the Royal Commission. We will talk to the families about the process for appointing the person. The Royal Commission has already appointed a family and community liaison officer to liaise with bereaved families and respond to their concerns. The new council assisting can work closely with the officer and the families themselves to make sure their interests are addressed and questions are answered. As the cost of an additional council assisting cannot be met from within the Royal Commission's existing budget, the government will provide additional funding to cover this. Initial back of the envelope estimates are that the costs will amount to approximately $375,000. This week, the government's ultra-fast broadband initiative steps up a gear with the start of the rollout in Tauranga on Tuesday and the first premises in Auckland on Wednesday. Also on Wednesday, Stephen Joyce will outline which areas will receive ultra-fast fibre in the next 12 months. The ultra-fast broadband initiative is central to the government's economic growth plans. This initiative will see 75% of New Zealanders connected to broadband speeds of 100 megabits per second or better. That's about 50 times the speed currently available in Auckland and Wellington. The UFB sees us leapfrogging a wide range of international competitors, improving our connectivity and drive economic growth. The development of this new digital technology will change the way we work, the way we learn, the way we receive healthcare and the way we live our lives. Just in terms of ministerial activity, I'm in Otaki electorate tonight, then Whanganui where I'll stay overnight. On Wednesday I have more appointments in Whanganui before returning to Auckland. On Thursday I'm in Auckland, then Northland, and on Friday I'm back in Auckland before flying to Wellington to attend the World of Wearable Arts, all subject of course to the funeral of Doug Grant. Questions? That's right. Well, I hope so. That seems to be the feedback that the Attorney General got yesterday. We are appointing another lawyer. We'll talk to the families about that appointment process, but that lawyer's sole responsibilities will to be act and represent the families. Look, it is a compromise to a certain degree. I mean, I think that we were always comfortable that the two existing counsel could provide that that work and that legal advice along with the liaison officers. In the final analysis, the families have felt a little vulnerable. They have a high degree of anxiety. We obviously have great sympathy for their position. And so, look, as a gesture of goodwill, we've decided to appoint another counsel. Yeah. I guess the way I'd describe it is it's always been dangerous in Afghanistan. Maybe the place the places where that insurgency and that insurgent activity is taking place is slightly changing. Certainly we think they've changed their tactics. They seem to be undertaking more high-profile, media-friendly insurgent acts so that they can attract a lot of international attention. That's why we think they went after the Intercontinental Hotel in Kabul, etc. So it's more changing in nature as opposed to becoming more dangerous, I think. I think so. I attended a function a few months ago with the SAS, and I just looking at the photo, I remember him, but I don't remember having a long conversation with him. He wasn't with me when I went in 2009, from memory. No, we can't rule it out. I mean, our plan at this point is to bring them home in March 2012. We think they will have had 2.5 years there and done a tremendous job. We think that's in line with our expectations of how long that they would be there. But, you know, we always take things on a case-by-case basis. I can't rule out that they wouldn't be deployed in another rotation at some time in the future, but that's not something we're planning at the moment. No, I think Labour are completely misrepresenting the facts. I could go through a number of quotes, but maybe the best one is one I made to this press conference in January 2010, when I said, "No one should be under any illusion. The SAS at any particular time could be involved in a conflict that could see them hurt or killed and could certainly see them firing weapons. They're not there to eat their lunch in Afghanistan. They're there to play a very important role." No, it's primarily a mentoring role, actually. I mean, if you look at, and I think CDF took everyone through exactly what happened at the British Council on Friday, but the CRU ran that operation. There were, I think, about 100 CRU members involved in that operation. The New Zealanders did play a mentoring role when it started getting a bit nastier. There were more of them called in as backup, but the command of that whole operation was with the CRU. And my understanding, just talking to the SAS members as I did in the weekend, there's certainly a substantial increase in capability coming from the CRU. They're not as good as the New Zealand SAS, but as I've so often said, they haven't had the level of training or expertise that our guys have, but they are getting a lot better. I can't really. I don't know an awful lot about it. I don't think it's on my diary for him to meet me. I think he's meeting the Minister of Defence and probably the Minister of Foreign Affairs. He was former British ambassador. He's got an envoy role, as I understand it, in Afghanistan. I'm sure he'll be giving us a bit of an update on how they see things playing out and what the Brits are doing over there, but that's about it. It's not my expectation he would come to New Zealand and lobby us about our engagement or involvement, and if he did, he'd be wasting his time. I don't take writing instructions from other people who come from overseas. I take writing instructions from my cabinet and what I think is the right level of engagement and deployment of our forces.
Do these most recent events show perhaps the need for New Zealand to stay on? Well, I know you're not signalling that at all, but does it show that the capability isn't there and probably won't be by the time?
Well, I think it's a fair question. I mean, we've asked the same question ourselves, and the response we're getting is that the CRU is dramatically improving in terms of its capability. I mean, I think there'd always be a case put by some members of the SAS to stay longer and to continue to work and to improve their capability. The question is, you know, when is the right time to come home? Some people argue, well, you know, in terms of training, there'll never be the right time. My view is they will have been away for about 2.5 years, that they're only a small unit and they need to regroup. So look, if we are in the position to be the government post November 26, we'll do what we've always done before, and that is go through that process of talking to the CDF, checking out our other military and defence requirements in Afghanistan, making sure that we're carrying out and not putting it risk the lives of our PRT and the others, but on balance at the moment, you know, my expectation is they're coming home.
What's the status of the high-value manufacturing review and the future of IRL on
funding capital? So that? Yeah, so we're working our way through that whole issue, and what I can say is we're very committed to trying to build that capability. I think it's fair to say we're also very conscious of the role that IRL plays in the hut and the high significance that both the mayor and the community put in there by the fact that they're there in on the Hutt Valley. So, look, before the election, I think we will be in a position to expand, you know, our vision for where we're going with both IRL and general in the science and innovation sector. And I'd just rather wait until we're in that position to make that announcement.
And so, just to go back to the Christchurch legal...
Yes. I don't think I'd characterise it that way. I think we're just trying to find a bit of common ground. I mean, our view has been that the way the council assisting the Royal Commission was established and with the liaison officer, that was similar to the blueprint that was used for the Victorian bushfires, and we thought that was about right. What is clear is that, you know, obviously given the scale of the disaster, the anxiety from the families and the need to make sure that they feel connected and represented in the process, you know, we're taking a step further in terms of trying to work with another council member that's solely, or another lawyer that's solely dedicated towards them. So, look, we're giving a bit of ground. I'm not arguing that we're not, but I don't think we would say that we had the previous setup wrong. Well, I'd hope that it would be. I mean, my understanding from the Attorney General is that the group that they met with yesterday represents some families, but certainly not all the families. Quite a number of families have been in contact with his office saying they're actually happy with the way the process is going. So I would hope that one person would be enough. Look, for the most part, I think you'd be better to take that up directly with Gerry Brownlee. I haven't actually seen the particular cases. There'll definitely be some unders and overs on the overall process. My understanding, and you'd need to check with Gerry, but at the time we made the announcement, we said, look, the basis we're using is rateable value, but if there were substantial improvements that had been undertaken since the time rateable value had been assessed, then that could be taken into consideration. So I don't think that's just a small paint job, but if a major addition had been made, then that would need to be taken factored in. But if I could just direct you to Gerry, that would be the place to go.
What about the issue of land values, which people are having to move from the east where land values are low to perhaps the west or north where land values are higher and are going higher even more? These people are going to be facing larger mortgages potentially or
having to move further. Yeah, so firstly, I think what we're trying to do is make sure that there is a good supply of land. So we're working, Sarah's going to be working with the council, and one good thing about Christchurch is there's lots of land that can be released. Not all of it's been zoned yet, but we can fast track that process. Secondly, the banks are there willing to step up and play a role in helping finance people if there is a shortfall, because you're right, there will be some people that will ultimately have to buy a more expensive section because they're arguably in a more expensive part of Christchurch. I mean, thirdly, I think it's just worth putting a bit of perspective around it. We've had a bit of a look around the world. We can't see any other example around the world where the government's actually stepped up and said, we'll buy every home. So it's not perfect for every homeowner. And if you're the homeowner that's losing out a bit here, then you know, obviously we understand that the anxiety that's causing them. But overall, I think by a reasonable measure, the government's trying to do the right thing by everyone, and for the most part, I think we're getting it right.
What about those, say, older people that can't afford to take out a mortgage? The banks just aren't
there. Yeah, so we need to look at that situation if there's a particular issue. I mean, as a general rule, hopefully we would be able to get them into another property, and there should be other options there. I think we're in slightly better shape. We've established CERA. We've now got a blueprint for how land is going to be zoned. We've got a package for how people will be taken out of their damaged property. We're certainly working very as quickly as we possibly can to get repairs undertaken. You're seeing the big building contractors like Fletcher's and the likes absolutely gearing up rapidly. You've got a draft blueprint plan now for the CBD and a sense of where people are going. So, I mean, my sense of it all is when I went there after the June 13th quake, I think that was really the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of Cantabrians. I think they had, there's only so many times you can dig out your house and put up with, you know, massive earthquakes and liquefaction before you've had a gutsful. And I think come June 13th, they already put their hands up and say, I've had enough of all this. But my sense was going back very recently when we had the Restart the Heart project, that people could actually see a future, they could feel it and taste it, they could see that there was a plan to rebuild Christchurch and it wasn't moving around so much, there'd been a lot less seismic activity. So I think confidence is starting to return, and actually on Jerry's numbers, I don't have official confirmation in my office, but on Jerry's numbers, you know, a remarkably few number of people have actually left Christchurch. I think it's about 8,500, I think, the numbers he's been quoting, that sort of magnitude. So a lot less than what people thought.
Wine Growers Association is the latest export group to come out complaining about the high New Zealand dollar.
Yeah.
Is this still just a case of sit it out? Because QE3 is looking increasingly likely.
Yeah, so I mean, the exchange rate is, I think we're well-rehearsed territory there, we can't do much there. But one thing I will say in terms of the Australian dollar, I mean, Australia's a big market for them. So, you know, they, you know, I think New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc's very, very large sellers in Australia. And I mean, I think the good news part of the story for the wine industry is they seem to have got through the glut. So the issue now is about margin as opposed to finding a market.
They're saying also that they're having to send some jobs offshore, some of the supposed production jobs.
Yep. Yeah, I hadn't seen them outsourcing that much there. I mean, what I have seen them doing is, for instance, importing bottles a bit more rather than using the manufacturing plant in Auckland, some things where the higher exchange rates actually help them because it becomes cheaper.
That's not helping the workers in Auckland.
No, correct. That's right. Well, I mean, that's the dilemma we face with a higher exchange rate. Yeah.
Comments on Afghanistan? Yeah.
Yes.
Given the New Zealand life has been lost in Kabul, are you seeking any further information on the progress that President Karzai is making on corruption in his administration?
Well, our ambassador there, you know, constantly, you know, keeps himself abreast of those issues. And I think we all recognise there are issues in Afghanistan, and that the government's got a lot of work to do to make sure that it is not only a legitimate government that actually is clean in that regard, and it stamps out corruption. But that's a process you work your way through.
Would progress in that area be a factor in any decision to keep the troops there?
It's not a factor in terms of the SAS or the PRT, but it's a very important factor if Afghanistan is going to get on its feet and have the, enjoy the support of the wider population.
With the apples in Australia,
yep.
The opposition agriculture spokesman was planning to introduce a bill today blocking that again.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I hope he sees common sense. I mean, at the end of the day, it's been a long-fought battle to get apples into Australia, I mean, 90 years. But bluntly, New Zealand's won that argument with the WTO. And my view is Australia is a country that's like New Zealand. It's an export nation. It's benefited very strongly from the WTO rules. You can't pick and choose those rules. And so I think the Australians should just get on with it. And I think that's the view that the Australian government's adopted. And I think, you know, in the end, I hope common sense prevails with the Australian opposition, because I think it would be, you know, a very negative step for Australia to start saying it's going to choose, it's going to oppose a WTO ruling when it accepts all the other WTO rulings. Well, I don't know why they're doing it, but I mean, I'm sure they feel strongly about it, but in the end, there's been a pretty clear case and they lost.
A couple of polls out the last few days.
Yeah, I noticed those. Look, I think we all accept that polls, you know, narrow up as you get into an election, and elections are really hard fought, and a lot could change in 97 days. So from our perspective, I mean, we are working really hard to try and earn the right to be the next government. We know things can change dramatically. We don't take things for granted. I think we've got a good record. I think for the last 3 years we've worked hard to build up the trust and confidence of the New Zealand public, and I think that's what's being reflected in these polls. But as we saw in 2002, for Labor, a lot can change as you go into that run-up into the election. So, you know, our message is a very simple one to those that want to see a national government re-elected. You know, we've got to get out there and earn those votes. We've got to get everyone out there to vote for us, and don't take things for granted, because, bluntly, there's only one poll that counts.
Is there a risk for National in a sense that you're polling too well and that, you know, voters see single party majority government, and if, you know, at the last minute some of your voters might be the other way.
I don't know whether they actually don't so much want to see a single party, it's just it's so incredibly difficult to do. I mean, Germany's had the same system and only ever done it once in the 1950s, as I understand it. I mean, it's fundamentally a very difficult thing to achieve, to get one and two voters to vote for you. So, look, I don't know. I think they're obviously... there's a lot of water to flow under the bridge between now and then. As I say, things can change dramatically. So.
Still very little movement.
Yep. Doesn't actually, but I was more of the view that there wouldn't be a lot of movement early on. Look, again, in the final analysis, last time we saw a few of the hard right-wing national voters go over to ACT in the last sort of week because it was becoming more obvious that National would get over the line in 2008. Can't rule that out in 2011. But I didn't think there'd be substantial movement, and there hasn't been. Look, I'm just not in a position to comment about that. I mean, at the end of the day, I got a lot of things on my plate. The leadership of the Labor Party isn't one of them. We'll just carry on fighting our fight, and whoever turns up, we'll debate with them in the polls, in the debates.
Do you have a view on Colin Slade or Aaron Cruden tomorrow?
I don't think you should write somebody off for one bad game. Didn't sound like Slade had the greatest of games, but there's a lot of pressure in South Africa. I mean, I think, you know, Mighty All Blacks are going to come through. That's been my view. And the Cup, they've got a lot of bench strength, and I reckon they're going to get there. But.
Just on back to the Australian Forum, do you have any idea of what international leaders may be coming and anything?
Yeah, we've got a pretty good sense of them. Probably won't detail them for you today, but I mean, all the obvious names, obviously, from the Pacific, and because of the post-forum dialogue and the effort that we've put in there, I think there'll be quite a lot of leaders that we'll see come out. I think it should be an exciting lineup, actually. I suspect next week. I think that might be right. It's about a week out.
And some from outside the Pacific?
Yes, definitely. Yes. Yep.
And you did invite them?
We've invited them, yes. Yep. We'll have to wait until next week. Okay.
Has he declined?
Sorry?
Has he declined?
Well, he hasn't declined, no. Well, let's wait and see. Thanks very much.